Hey, what's up? This is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 24 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I was lucky enough to talk to Steve Dolinsky from ABC7 Chicago, The Hungry Hound. He's also known for the Feed podcast that he does with Rick Bayless, which is one of my favorite podcasts. It's incredible. He has such a wealth of knowledge. He has 13 James Beard Awards. Unheard of. It's amazing. If you want to know anything about Chicago food and the Chicago food trends, talk to Steve Dolinsky, and I talked to him about Chicago barbecue, and he gives a ton of information about the history of Chicago barbecue up to the present, what restaurants he's going to, ones off the beaten path, the different meats they're smoking at these places, what they do right, what they do wrong. I really think you'll enjoy it. Please subscribe. Please rate this podcast. It kind of gives me a barometer as to how I am doing. Thank you so much, Steve. Enjoy. Well, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Do you have a busy day ahead of you?
I do. I'm going to check out the new Goose Island brew pub, brew house storage facility, and then I'm going to take a look at their new brew pub.
Oh, really cool.
And then I'm going to probably check out a new Russian pelmeni dumpling place in Lincoln Park.
Oh, nice.
And tonight I'm going to check out two new places next to each other in the Google building in the West Loop. One is from Jim Meehan, who started PDT in New York City.
Okay.
He is originally from Oak Park here in the suburbs. Okay. And they've got a new cocktail place. And then next door to it is a place called Regards to Edith, which apparently has a $19 Chicago Italian beef. So I'm not sure if they make it with Wagyu or what. But
it sounds like they must do something like that, right?
Yeah, I'm checking that out tonight.
Oh, excellent. Are you going to be posting that online? Do you post as you go, or do you usually do it a couple days later?
Depends. I will probably post something on Instagram tonight if it's good, if it's notable. Uh-huh. I might put something on my website about it if I really like it. And then if I truly believe in it, I will call them up in a couple of days and then set up a time to go back with a camera and shoot something for ABC.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Well, I wanted to talk to you about Chicago barbecue and how it's transformed and changed over the years since, because you've lived in Chicago your entire life, or just your business life. I don't know your history as deeply as I'd want to. How did you get your start?
I moved here from I'm originally from Minneapolis.
Okay.
And I worked my way around the Midwest in a couple of small markets, Upper Michigan and Iowa, and then I got to Chicago in 92, worked for the Tribune Company. They still have CLTV, which is Chicagoland Television. Mm-hmm. It's their sort of local version of CNN, kind of 24-hour news channel. And I did news reporting for them for probably 2 years. And then in 95, we launched the Good Eating Show that the Tribune was launching in conjunction with the newspaper. They were rebranding it. The food section, and so the Good Eating section was coming out, and we were doing this companion TV show, and I became the producer of that show and worked with the Tribune's food staff every week to create this weekly half-hour show, and we did 52 shows a year, which
Oh, wow.
Is unheard of in 95, 96.
Yeah, no one was doing that.
The Food Network had launched in like 93, 94.
That's so what I was going to say. I think it was 93, 94, yeah.
So we were doing the Good Eating Show, and the good thing about that was I was really getting on-the-job training. It was kind of my trial by fire. Every week I would be in somebody else's kitchen. We did recipe segments from the Tribune's test kitchen with the test kitchen director. We did wine reviews with William Rice, who was the wine columnist. We did Cheap Eats. So I covered kind of the whole gamut. And, you know, Chicago, mid-90s, there was a lot of Charlie Trotter, but we've always had a lot of great ethnic food. And so that's kind of what I always gravitated toward, kind of the little neighborhood gems, mom and pops. And I did that show for about 8 years. And while I was doing that, I just started pitching myself as a food reporter. I called up public radio and I pitched some stories and I became their food correspondent. And I pitched CS Magazine and Michigan Avenue Magazine and would write reviews and do profiles for the Chicago Reader, which is the weekly independent here. So food came my niche and my beat. And then when they canceled the show in 2003, I just decided I'm not going to go back into news because they wanted me to go back into news reporting. And I said, by then I'd been doing food for, 8 years.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to be covering the FBI press conferences anymore. So I shot myself around as a food reporter to all of the news directors in town. And lo and behold, ABC and NBC were both interested in doing something. And so they offered me part-time gigs, which led to more. I went to ABC because they're the number one in the market. And then it just led to, I was doing up to four pieces a week for ABC. And they just liked the fact that, you know, I'm not a restaurant critic. I'm not going in anonymously. I'm on a television. You know, I can't be anonymous. So I'm not reviewing restaurants per se, but I am looking for stories or unique angles or interesting dishes or ingredients or techniques that people maybe haven't heard about. And so it's kind of my job to inform them about, you know, what is in their neighborhood, what's in their community. So I've been doing it's called the Hungry Hound segment, BC, for 14 years. And I still do occasional freelance for the Chicago Tribune's travel section or the Globe and Mail in Canada for their travel section. I do a podcast, actually. So the radio gig led to the creation of a podcast called The Feed Podcast.
Yeah, I love that podcast.
Thanks. And I do that with Rick Bayless every Thursday, drop a new show. So we do literally 51 shows a year for that.
Well, you're a busy guy, huh?
I managed to stay busy. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on in Chicago. You know, the sad thing is that as much as there is going on here and as much interest and demand as there is, the publications just cannot support full-time food journalism here. It's really difficult. I mean, the Tribune's made an investment in it, and they've got a pretty robust staff, but, man, everybody has been just cut to the bone.
Yeah, and it seems like Chicago, of any city, would be able to support that, but I guess it's a different time these days, and also that's kind of why you do a number of different things too, because you're passionate about food and you want to make sure that you cover it.
Well, and you hope that one of those things hits. Like, you know, I'm working on creating a food podcast network, and I'm working on another podcast without Rick Bayless, just by myself, and so trying to create something that, you know, gets some traction and builds an audience and gets advertiser support and all that good stuff, and I'm able to make a living doing it.
And how do you enjoy doing the podcast? Is that something it's a difficult thing, or is it really time consuming? I've never done a podcast before, and I know that certain ones do take up a lot of time.
You know, it depends. I mean, for us, we have a friend of mine who was a producer editor at WBEZ, which is the public radio station that I used to work at. He edits our show every week. So we get together. We're very efficient with our time. We do like seven shows in one day.
I plan
way in advance. So like late November, we're doing our next round, and that will take us through, you know, into January. So we don't do it. We're not like getting together every week, but we are finding that we can get everything together in one day.
Because I imagine Rick was busy too. I was just trying to figure out how you coordinate that.
He's crazy busy. But I will say that, you know, every now and then, like Alice Waters is in town, and that doesn't fall on a day we're taping. And so then I'll reach out to his assistant, and we coordinate our schedules, and we just make sure that we're available for, you know, an hour on a Thursday.
Alice Waters, you want to be available.
Of course. You know, and we had the co-author from Modernist Bread was just in town on book tour, so we interviewed Francisco Magoya also. So we do make exceptions, but to answer your question, it is difficult just in terms of organization. We want to do a new show every week. We want to be regular with that, so that does require a lot of planning on my part. I've got an intern who helps a little bit. We've invested in some good microphones. Literally, the microphone that I'm talking on right now, I just cracked open out of the box. These are these new Shure microphones. I'm trying to see if I like these. So hopefully they sound good.
It does. The quality sounds really good. And that is important. Sound, I've realized I need to up my sound game.
I mean, it's a podcast. That's all you have to rely on is the sound, right? So you've got to really have good sound. And, you know, just a quiet environment and a good mixer. And I mean, it doesn't require a lot of equipment, though. I went to the podcast convention in Anaheim in August, and there were several hundred people there. And a lot of them had just been starting out, but there were there's like a marketplace of vendors selling the equipment. And you can get in for under $1,000 and kind of build a show.
Oh, wow. And I'd love to do that too, because I think that's important. I think, especially in the barbecue world, I know there are some guys that are kind of jumping in, but I love talking to people, and I think I could also translate this to a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be surprised if there's not a barbecue podcast already.
There's a couple that are, I think there's one that's, there's two or three, and they're all mostly Texas-based.
Of course.
Yeah, which makes sense. People do love their Texas.
The Carolinas, you know, that somebody in Kansas City could do something. You know, I think Chicago is a weird and interesting barbecue landscape.
Yeah, let's jump into that. I'd love to talk about that.
Okay. You want to talk about Chicago barbecue?
I would love to. Yes, definitely. Okay. So when you first started out, how has it changed?
Well, if you go back to the origins of Chicago barbecue and you think about like the Great Migration, African Americans coming up here for jobs mm-hmm. in the 40s and early 50s. And so a lot of them settled in Bronzeville, which is on the south side of the city. Not that far, actually, just north of Hyde Park, where the University of Chicago is. And a lot of these barbecuers were coming from Tennessee and from Mississippi from Georgia. And so they brought with them this style that we call it aquarium style smoking. And I don't know if this existed in Mississippi or Arkansas, but a lot of the pitmasters I noticed in Chicago, like Honey One Barbecue or Lem's or Leon's, have these aquarium style smokers. Now, do you know what those are?
I honestly don't know. Please tell me.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So it is essentially a large rectangular box, and there are window panes on both sides that slide open. I think they're glass. Okay. Yeah, they're not glass, so you can see all of the the grill, mm-hmm. and then the product goes on top of the grill, and it's typically links, ribs, and tips, mm-hmm. and chicken.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of links and tips.
Definitely. Oh yeah, that's all I read about. And that's all I've had.
It's expensive cut, but it's got a lot of fat and a lot of flavor. And so that sits right on top of the grill, and then the fire is directly below it. There is no offset here because it's all in this one vertical rectangular space. And so you've got all this wood blazing underneath the product. You think it would burn it, so you always have to have a hose right next to it, and the pitmaster is constantly hosing down the wood to tame the flames.
Oh, that's so interesting.
But you still got all this smoke coming off throughout the day, and so it still takes about 2 to 3 hours to do ribs, but they're never doing brisket. Mm-hmm. They're never doing pork shoulder. It's just too hot.
Definitely.
So that's why you just see the links, tips, and ribs. And when they and then, you know, there's the vertical sort of exhaust out the top of the building. And so you're constantly opening and closing the glass. You're constantly checking. You're moving. You're turning. When they plate, it's kind of interesting. I have to ask for sauce on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this never comes up in Hill Country in Texas or in the Carolinas probably. But if you say nothing and you just order like a full rack of ribs or an order of tips, it will come. They'll chop it up, you know, individual pieces in a white styrofoam clamshell. And then they'll cover it with sauce. And I don't like the Chicago style sauce, like a Sweet Baby Ray's. It's got sugar in it.
It is very sweet.
Very sweet. And cloying. And I think, you know, covers up any kind of beauty, you know, deliciousness you have, sort of that you cover that smoke ring. Anyway, so you cover it with sauce, and then you put French fries on top of that. No, wait a second. You put white bread on top of that.
Okay.
That serves as a divider, and then some wax paper, and then French fries. And then sometimes they put sauce on top of the fries, too, and then close up the clamshell. It's a little bit, it's definitely a starch bomb. I always just say no bread, no fries, because the fries are never hand cut.
Mm-hmm.
And twice fried. So I just say no bread, no fries, and sauce on the side.
Sauce on the side. But Do you use the sauce at all, or is it something that you...
As an accent, barely. Mm-hmm. I don't think it really needs it. There's just a lot of fat and gristle in the tips. There's a lot of flavor in there. And the links don't need really anything at all. So that's kind of the Chicago South Side style. You know,
so that was a South Side style.
That's South Side for sure. That is, but you know, that's Chicago style barbecue, because when you think about Chicago and you go back in the history, there was no North Side. Mm-hmm. I mean, people weren't barbecuing on the North Side. That all came from African Americans, Great Migration, South Side, Bronzeville especially.
Gotcha.
So there are still a handful of places left, not very many. A lot of them have closed, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, there are second generations coming on now, like Leon's has their offspring is now reopening Leon's, I've heard. Lem's Daughters installed a new smoker on 75th Street, and they're going to try to make it another go at it, I guess. They've been open. I just don't think they've been that great.
Okay.
So,
how about Honey One, is it?
And Honey One is on 43rd Street. Yeah, they do a nice
still
job.
Still right?
Lee Bronzeville, actually.
Okay.
And Robert, the owner, is from Arkansas, and he and his son own that place. They used to be on the north side for a while. It wasn't a great location, not good foot traffic, and so I think they're more appreciated in Bronzeville. And again, ribs, tips, links, maybe chicken, and that's about it. And not a lot of sides, maybe coleslaw and beans.
And when did you see the north side places start to open up, or at what point were things kind of changing in the barbecue scene?
Well, for many years, if you go back to the 70s or 80s, there's a place called Twin Anchors mm-hmm. in Lincoln Park, which I am not a fan of. I'm not even really sure who is. They don't smoke their ribs. They're they're baked and they're or they're boiled or they're steamed. I mean, there's no they're gray. There's not really.
I think they're boiled. That's whatever.
They're boiled. Yeah, that which I mean, really, that's barbecue. It's like it looks like. I mean, it's a quirky, fun little. It's an offshoot. It's like a looks like a Wisconsin supper club. You know, it's got the hams clock in the wall and a dartboard. Whatever. It's kitschy and fun and like it's a throwback. But you don't go there for barbecue. So that's been around. Like when I moved here in the early 90s, it was all about Twin Anchors for ribs and Carson's was another place.
Oh
for
yeah,
ribs.
Carson's. Yeah, okay.
Again, I think you know, kind of like average. Mediocre ribs, nothing really to write home about. But about 10, at least 10, if not maybe a couple of years, maybe 12 years ago, Smoke came on the scene.
Yeah, Smoke seemed to, that got on my radar for sure.
And that's S-M-O-Q-U-E. Mm-hmm. These are three guys who are in tech who kind of got, you know, like a lot of stories, they got disenchanted with what they were doing. Mm-hmm. And Barry Sorkin is one of the guys who's kind of been the spokesperson for the trio. And they wrote a manifesto, and they said, this is what, you know, barbecue should be, what we think it should be, and, you know, it should not fall off the bone. You know, we think if something should fall off the bone, it probably shouldn't come on a bone.
That's a great point, yes.
Sauce should be on the side. You know,
I don't know when that became the barometer for smoked meat for that to be it's cooked so long that it falls off the bone.
So, yeah, like Applebee's or you know, Bennigan's.
I think it's
or
one of those guys, yeah.
Standards for all of a sudden what America thinks of barbecue. Mm-hmm. So sad. So they really stuck to the Texas style. They really wanted to emulate what was happening down in Austin and in Hill Country and Kreutz and Smitty's and all those great places. And so they really focused on their brisket. And it's basically, I think it's mostly black pepper and mm-hmm. salt and a little bit of dry rub, but mostly black pepper like they would in Texas, 13, 14 hours, give or take. They do a nice job with the ribs. They really have a pronounced smoke ring. The pit beans are outstanding. The mac and cheese outstanding. I mean, everything that they do there is well thought out. They don't do too much. They do pork shoulder, and they pull pork, but they don't go crazy with, you know, offering 17 different things on the menu. Yeah. Brisket sliced or chopped. And
I think they're getting their sausage from Texas, from Tim McKeska.
From Tim McKeska, absolutely, yeah. He was just here for the Windy City Smokeout a couple months ago.
Great guy.
And he is a great guy. He's supplying, I think, their jalapeno and their jalapeno cheddar, and they just smoke it here. But, yeah, that to me, that is really, I think, the pinnacle of barbecue right now in Chicago. But then there's guys like, you know, Lily's Q. Charlie McKenna does a great job. Mm-hmm. He's a competition barbecuer. 2 years ago, he and his dad won first place pulled pork at Memphis in May.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Nothing to slouch at,
no,
right?
No, not at all.
And he's been on the competition circuit for years. They've got a serious rig. I mean, you know, you've seen these rigs when they're in competition mode. Yeah. And he's got the Yeti coolers, and he's got the whole offset thing going on, and then like a lounge in his trailer. But he does a great job. And he's one of the few, the only guys in town doing tri-tip, which you don't see that Santa Maria style anywhere in Chicago. So that's an interesting thing at Lily's Q.
And Lily's Q is a little bit more high-end?
Yeah, it's a little high-end. I mean, it's in Bucktown. It's in a kind of a swankier neighborhood. They do fried chicken. They do a lot of different sauces.
Their sauces I see all the time at different supermarkets.
Yeah, that's right. They sell those around the country now. They do like an Alabama white sauce, which is kind of you never see anywhere in Chicago. But their product is also excellent. I think they do a very good job. You know, they're consistent. They've got a really good system down. And Charlie used to work at I think Alinea or Trio, one of those high end.
Yeah, I think he did. Yeah.
So he really approaches it from a chef's perspective. Which I think is unique and rare in that industry. There's another place called Barbecue Supply Company. It's way up on the north side, almost near Evanston.
Okay.
This is Jared Wentworth. Used to have it was called Rub Backcountry Barbecue.
Okay.
And I went there twice. I was unimpressed, and I thought it was very inconsistent and dry and just lots of problems. And he realized that they were not really paying attention to it because they were so busy focused on their Nashville hot chicken joint called Budlong.
Okay.
So he brought in this pitmaster, Dylan Leip, and Dylan has done such a great job. They really focused the menu. They got rid of the commodity pork. They got rid of the average brisket they're now using, a Snake River Farms.
Oh, that's smart.
Brisket. They really are doing a nice job. Duroc pork. They're smoking their cobbler. They've got like a truffled mac. So Everything's got a little bit of a touch of sort of fine dining, but not to the point where it's unrecognizable. Okay. And I have just had two great meals there, and so I did a story on them for ABC recently. But they just opened up in Hyde Park on the south side, which is also rare for some of these places to open up on the south side. It's a different audience. It's a lot of college students because University of Chicago. Mm-hmm. But it's, Barbecue Supply Company is doing a great job.
Barbecue Supply Company. I'll check them out, and I'll definitely put a link to that.
They do sell sauces and rubs from other places, and they've got a private event space. They do pit-to-table events, so it's kind of cool, too.
And I'll also put a link to your story from ABC.
Yeah, it aired about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Excellent. I missed it. I definitely want to check it out. Are there any other places that are kind of popping up that might not be on people's radar or places that people should be checking out?
Yeah. I mean, I think Honky Tonk is for sure off of people's radar only because it's in Pilsen, which is on the near south side. And Pilsen is thought of as a very heavily Mexican-American concentrated neighborhood. And there are a lot of great taquerias there. Although a guy that I know just opened up an amazing Vietnamese restaurant down on Pilsen. And 18th Street is kind of the main artery.
Okay.
But Honky Tonk Barbecue has done a nice job for several years also. And they've managed to build an audience. And again, it's a lot of the same things, you know, pulled pork and ribs, and sometimes you see tips. Tips are mostly just in the aquarium style south side, deep south side. Most other places are ribs, brisket, pulled pork. So Honky Tonk does a nice job as well. I think Gary Wiviot does a great job Barn and Company. Yeah, they are.
He's a nice guy.
Great guy. He wrote Low and Slow, two volumes, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of become a barbecue guru, major domo in Chicago. And he's consulted with other places and helped them out and kind of get them started. And so Barn and Company is another place that's definitely worth a visit. I've had some amazing brisket from him. Burnt ends as well. You don't see a lot of burnt ends in Chicago. I did have some good burnt ends at Mr. B's, which is a relatively new barbecue place in Lincoln, in North Center, kind of on the northwest side of the city. Again, ribs, tips, brisket. No, ribs, brisket, and burnt ends.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I would say, you know, Honky Tonk, Mr. B's, Barn and Company, those three you don't hear about as much as the Lily's Q and the Smoke.
So do you feel like there's a better representation of barbecue now in Chicago than there ever was? Like if you really want to go out and eat some interesting barbecue, you have a chance now.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, when I started in covering food in 95, there was nothing. There was Carson's and the Twin Anchors, which I mentioned earlier, and then a couple places on the south side. And now, I mean, we've got at least a half dozen I would put up against anybody in the country. And the cool thing is they've done this Windy City Smokeout the last 5-6 years, and they're doing a great job with it. And they're bringing in other great pitmasters from around the country, but they're also promoting the local guys as well, who I think do a great job. It's organized by Let Us Entertain You, so obviously Bub City is a part of it. And Bub City is fine, and they're in River North, and they do definitely a good job, I think, of barbecue. I'd rather go into the neighborhoods and get something a little bit more interesting and more personal.
Well, definitely. And would you say that those original three, would that have been Chicago style if there was a Chicago style barbecue?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the Chicago style now is the Smoke and the Lily's Q and Barbecue Supply. They just, you know, I don't think burnt ends are a part of our discussion here, and that's kind of a rarity, and certainly tri-tip is not. But I think, you know, sliced brisket, pulled pork. They've definitely adopted the Carolina style with the coleslaw and those sandwiches, and I would say tips and links.
And with Chicago with regulations, you can't have an offset smoker at a restaurant, right?
No, they are so, like, when I saw Smitty's, you know, in Texas, or I've seen Kreutz, like what they're doing, like Louis Mueller.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That just does not exist in Chicago ever. Yeah. Maybe in the suburbs. And there's a guy way out in Palatine, which is a good 45-minute drive from downtown. And I think it's called Chicago. Yeah, Chicago's in the name for some reason, because he said Palatine has no sex appeal. But he's only open on the weekends. Now, he could do something because he's way out in the middle of nowhere and not subject to sort of Cook County rules or Chicago rules. But no, I've not seen any offsets like that. I mean, the stuff in Texas is just so one of a kind.
And Smoke, are they in a building? Like I remember hearing something that they have their smoke goes up like a ventilator, or there's some kind of something really interesting, because they are in like a 5-10 story building?
They no smoke's in. Oh yeah, so Smoke has a second location.
Second location, that's what it is. Okay.
The Loop, yes, in the Revival Food Hall, and that's a tricky one because you're in the middle of the Loop and you can't have just an exhaust. It's at least a 10-story, if not more, building, and so they are smoking. He has to go up to the, like, the top floors, and they put a smoker in there with a vent that goes up the roof. Yeah, he's not smoking it down on the first floor. He's smoking it upstairs and then bringing it down every day for service.
Excellent. Okay, I knew there's.
They're doing turkey, which nobody else is doing in town.
Oh, okay. I think that's maybe. You know what? I think I've got this all from you.
Okay. I mean, typically you'd see turkey like at Franklin or even a lot of places in Austin are doing turkey now. But yeah, only that smoke downtown in Chicago is doing turkey.
And when you travel around, do you have any favorite barbecue joints that you go across the country that you make sure, if you do travel, that you make sure you hit?
I've always liked Little Joe's Eat It and Beat It in Kansas City. I'm not sure if they're still there. I like Oklahoma Joe's also in Kansas City, although I haven't been there in quite a while. I do think Lexington Barbecue is outstanding.
That's one of my first places that I went to. That
I don't like when they put the sauce in the coleslaw and it turns red, and I just that's not my style of coleslaw. The Hush Puppies I can take or leave it, but that shoulder is just incomparable.
Yeah, it's amazing, and that location is killer.
Location's great, and what else was I going to say? I think in Texas, you know, I don't need to go to Franklin anymore. I've been there twice. Mm-hmm. I think Law Barbecue is outstanding.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I like Micklethwaite Craft Meats quite a bit, partly because you're in that little cart in like a little park, and you're next to like a juice smoothie place, but I think their food is outstanding at Micklethwaite in Austin. I would definitely make it a point to go back there. And you know, nothing really else sort of, I mean, a couple places like Mighty Quinn's in New York is good. I should say in the Lower East Side, Mighty Quinn's was good. And Brisket Town. Those are kind of the places I've been. I like.
And Brisket Town is sadly gone away for a while.
Oh, what? Hey.
Yeah. Daniel's stopped that. I think he's going to jump back in again, but it's gone.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's tough business.
Yeah. No, it's not. It's, and especially in New York, that's not easy. Well, so what else should people know about what you're doing right now, so that way they can check out everything that you're doing?
I think the best thing is just go to stevedolinsky.com. That's my website, and I've got a little bar on the top. People should click to follow what I'm doing. I don't send out that many notices, but like once every other month, I'll send out a little newsletter and say, here's some interesting stories that we recently did on the feed, or an interesting piece we did on ABC7, or here's a travel piece I just wrote. I am working on a pizza book. So the pizza book is done. It's at the publisher now. They're working on production. The title is called Pizza City USA, 101 Reasons Why Chicago is America's Greatest Pizza Town.
Oh, nice.
And the reasons are twofold. It's one, because we have 10 different styles of pizza here. And the other is that our thin crust is phenomenal. We have it's called tavern style, Chicago style thin, which is square cut, thin and crispy, which you don't see in many places. But just to build up my street cred, over the next 10 months before the book comes out, I'm doing 4 trips to New York City to eat in 45 different pizza places just to make sure I've covered all my bases.
45, nice. Well, you're definitely diligent. That's amazing.
You can follow me on Instagram or Twitter on Steve Dolinsky with a Y, and they'll be able to follow that progress as well.
And also on your on Twitter as well, if they want.
Absolutely. Steve Dolinsky on Twitter, too.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I know we've been trying to get this together for a long time. So I thank you for your time, and it's an honor to speak with you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.